So many people love the ocean. We splash in it, swim in it, snorkel and paddleboard, and some of us, not me, even surf. We love the beach, the hot sand and the smell of sunscreen and salt in the air. Sunday mornings are the perfect time for many to stroll down to the beach, get your kids into nippers, teach them how to be surf lifesavers. There's a whole branch of my family that live this life. My uncle and my aunt were surf lifesavers for years, and their four children surfed and swam and lived on the beach, winning championships, all very tanned and athletic. They got jobs at the Surf Lifesaving Club, and even on Christmas Day, they'd be down at the beach competing in a pudding race. It's their community and kind of their religion. Surfing can be described in those terms, my religion, but a fun religion, which is sometimes a little bit dangerous as you chase after the next big wave. I'm told that surfing can become addictive. It's something you need to do every day because sometimes it all comes together, and it's like you and the wave are one. We long for such spiritual experiences. Kelly Slater, one of the greatest surfers of all times, grew up on the beach in Florida. He started surfing when he was 5 years old. By age 10, he was already starting to win championships. He says, "Surfing is my religion, if I have one. The barrel, the hollow of a breaking wave is really the ultimate ride for any surfer. It's the eye of the storm. Some guys say it's like being in the womb." So Slater keeps riding the waves, finding himself, finding maybe God in those fleeting moments. Experiencing a sense of God can be addictive. We can chase after such spiritual highs wherever we can find them, in the ocean, singing together in a dark theater, traveling the world, climbing up mountains, visiting ancient church buildings or temples, searching and searching for a glimpse of the divine. We want a dramatic experience, something that lifts us up out of our ordinary lives. But what difference do these experiences really make to how we live? Today, I'm going to ask you to jump in with Jonah. Now, Jonah is not chasing a spiritual high. You might remember that, in fact, he's doing all he can to run away from God, jumping on a ship and sailing away. But it's raining, and a heavy wind is blowing against the ship. Yahweh is blowing against the ship, and the sailors are terrified that they are about to drown. They've worked out that this storm is happening because Jonah is on board their ship. Yahweh, the maker of the seas and the lands and the heavens, is here. "What do we do?" they ask Jonah. And he says, "Pick me up and throw me into the sea. This is all my fault. Toss me over." And so the sailors reluctantly do exactly that. He hits the water and sinks. Down, down, down into the deep, and we go down with him. So that the world we are used to, full of light and noise, disappears, and instead we are submerged in the deep sea of blues. We're going on a long journey. Jonah has jumped into chaos. There's no order here. Nothing makes sense. He is disorientated, not sure which way is up and which way is down. He's searching for the surface, for air, but cannot find it. Instead, he is pummeled around in the ocean. So Jonah clings on to what he knows. He believes that everything is fixed, everything has its place. Right, wrong, I am good, and the people of Nineveh are wrong. That's a solid fact, isn't it? Jonah has no control here. His arms and legs dangle and flap, and everything is changing before his eyes. Creation unravels before his eyes. He sees everything in reverse, animals crawling back into the ocean, fish swimming backwards into their eggs, all the creatures of the ocean, seahorses and seals and dolphins gone. Seabirds no longer skimming the waves. Instead, there is just empty skies, light mingling with darkness, sea plants growing smaller and smaller until there's nothing but rock, rock crumbling and falling into cold water. Water, water everywhere. Water swirling in the darkness, formless and empty, and the Spirit of God hovering over it all. Jonah has been taught that chaos is a threat to God's good order. But chaos is like the sea, dangerous and wild. And God tamed it. God created something new from it, earth. Earth is an island surrounded by waters, and at any moment, those waters could be unleashed. Floods could come and wipe all of life away. The world is always on the edge, in danger of slipping back into chaos, disintegrating. And now Jonah is in the waters, and he is unraveling. Joel McCarrow, an Australian poet, talks about going through a time when everything unraveled for him. It actually began in Manly when he was walking around looking to buy some breakfast and he noticed a homeless man. He felt prompted to engage with this man and yet he kind of didn't want to, so he stood there for a long time before finally offering to buy the man breakfast. The man mumbled he was fine but invited Joel to sit and talk. Said his name was Joe. That was the beginning of Joel's faith unraveling. He had questions about how he'd been raised and if there was more to God than what he'd so far experienced. He went through a time when God seemed to disappear altogether. Christians don't always make room for this type of experience, for times of chaos and unraveling. Times when God does not seem to be with us, times of deconstruction. Scary. We can struggle to walk alongside people who are experiencing this. Joel goes on to say that after his unraveling came a weaving together. He looks back and sees God is there, even in the unraveling. This is a quote from him. The world spins, and the seasons come and go, and ages grow, and choices are made, and suffering and beauty come amid spit and laughter and deep lungfuls of life, and I wonder what you would do with it all. The honour and glory and pain of being human. What will you do with it? When Jonah's life unravels, he accuses God of bringing him to this place. Jonah 2 verse 3. You hurled me into the deep, into the very heart of the seas and the currents swirled about me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. I said, I have been banished from your sight. Yet I'll look again to your holy temple. My pain, my suffering is because of you, God. You set me up for this. Placed me on this path. You have left me, banished me from your presence. Jonah feels like he's been left to face the chaos alone. That is the opposite of the spiritual highs we chase after. When we encounter God in chaos, God often feels inscrutable. How does such an experience change you? Down, down, down into the deep goes Jonah, and we go with him. It's a long journey. You want death-defying adventures? You want to chase the next big wave? Let's go then and confront death itself. Jonah 2 verse 5. The engulfing waters threatened me. The deep surrounded me. Seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains, I sank down. To earth beneath barred me in forever. Jonah is drowning. He hits the bottom of the ocean floor and then falls out of this world and into the underworld, Sheol, the place of the dead. Sheol is the grave, the dark pit, dry dust and silence. This is what Jonah wanted. The last experience to be had, the one we are drawn to, the one we avoid. Death. Yeah, Jonah can wait for Nineveh to join him. They are the worst, aren't they? They deserve condemnation. People can't change. That's why this planet will one day unravel back into chaos. That's why we die. Except now he is here. Jonah realizes he does not want to die. He does not want this to be the end. He starts to think, do my life matter? Will anyone cry for me? He starts to long for water and light, for the bustle of the city, shoulders rubbing shoulders. He longs for music and conversations, for good food to eat. He longs for someone to hold him. So many good experiences he had. He misses God. Jonah can't believe that God is not here. God is always here, taking whatever Jonah might throw at him, chasing Jonah across the oceans. But now, can God hear him? Jonah has fallen out of the world, out of God's presence. In distress, Jonah tries anyway, tries to pray. He calls out to God, help. He remembers the temple, the beautiful temple where he would go to worship. What a spiritual high it was to be in such a place. The psalms they would sing to God would fill him with such joy. Songs of thanksgiving and grace, they moved him, those songs. And then God wanted him to leave the temple, his community, and go to Nineveh and preach. God really wanted Nineveh to hear his words. I would do it now, he bargains. Show me mercy, God. Don't leave me to rot in this place. Silence. And then a monster from the deep. Jonah has heard about the monsters that lurk in the oceans, splashing their tails, gulping people up. Some try to chase and trap them, tame or kill them, but this creature, she opens her mouth, teeth shining, and swallows him whole, carries him up, up, up. It's a long journey, 3 days and 3 nights. Jonah has never had an experience like this before. He lays in the warm water, deep in her belly. And he finds himself giving thanks to this creature from the deep. He draws on the psalms he knows to praise God, verse 7. But you brought my life up from the pit, O Yahweh, my God. I remembered you, Yahweh, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Once he would have labeled such a creature evil, ugly. He would have feared it, disgusted to be in such a place. But now this creature is his friend, or if not his friend, then certainly God's friend. This creature carries Jonah through the waters like Moses was carried in his basket, like God once parted the seas of the Israelites and rescued them from Egypt. Yahweh now saves Jonah. Up, up, up. In the collision and crash of waves, Jonah sees life unfolding before his eyes, God's spirit hovering, creating something new. He sees life unfolding out, stars exploding, lighting the darkness, bacteria to cells to multicellular organisms, sea plants growing, seabirds skimming across the water, fish swimming, sunlight on skin, babies crying. God is wild and alive at work in him, expanding his ideas and beliefs about what is justice and what is mercy, loosening them up, stretching and knitting them together. Jonah declares, verse 8, those who cling to worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. But I, with a song of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you. What I vowed, I will make good. Salvation comes from Yahweh. This is a second chance. He will be a good man. Jonah will be the prophet God has called him to be. He will rebuke all those fools who worship idols and run away from God. He's going to be different. How could he not, after such an experience as this? God speaks, and the fish vomits Jonah out onto dry land. He lies in its mark, and it's all so beautiful. The ocean is beautiful. That great sea creature lunging in the air before disappearing back into the water is beautiful. This is a second chance, and he doesn't want to waste it. Bethany Hamilton, another famous surfer, was off the coast of Hawaii when a shark came up to her and bit her arm off. She was 13 years old. In that terrible moment, a peace descended on her. She credits God for saving her, giving her the strength to live and go out into the water again. 14 years later, she posts on Instagram, "Today, I'm thankful to be alive. I look back and would not change that day otherwise. God can truly turn pain into beauty. We can grow through our hard times and overcome. Happy Stumpy Day to me." We like stories like this, right? We like to hear about people getting saved. We like to hear how lives can change. Bethany went on to win surfing championships. She shares her story. A movie has been made about her to encourage others. She's gotten married and is now raising a family. She still trusts God. These are the stories we like to tell of death and then resurrection. That's partly why we chase after spiritual highs. We want to experience it all, and we hope the more experiences we have, the more we'll be changed into good people. I've been shown mercy, I will be merciful. We long for such moments as Jonah has had. So we dive into the water, we snorkel and swim, get up on a surfboard, find new places, secret places just for us to enjoy. So many of us have missed not being able to sing. We miss how wonderful it can make us feel, like God is more powerfully with us. Do these encounters make a difference to how we live? When we leave a worship gathering, when we step out of the ocean back onto dry land, when we brush fish's vomit off us, have we been changed? The people in Jesus' day also longed for more. They kept saying to Jesus, "Show us more signs, more miracles, give us those spiritual highs." And Jesus got to a point when he said no. Matthew 12, verse 39, he answered, "A wicked and adulterous generation asks for a sign, but none will be given it except the sign of the prophet Jonah. For as Jonah was 3 days and 3 nights in the belly of a huge fish, so the Son of Man will be 3 days and 3 nights in the heart of the earth." Jesus wonders if this sign will change them. Will his death and resurrection have an impact? That's what he longs for people to change, to reflect God's character more in their lives. In the season of Advent, we are left hanging with this question. How has Jonah been changed by his experience? He has gone through chaos and death, and God saved him. So he praises God. He says all the right words, but how will he live going forward? Will he act differently? At Christmas, we celebrate that God has already come. God has already saved us through Jesus. Jesus went down into death, into its belly, to set us free. We now wait for Christ to come again. And as we wait, the question lingers. How have we been changed by Christ? How do we live going forward? Do we act differently? Or are we only interested in the experiences we can accumulate?